Welcome to the Pictures of Lily podcast. I'm your host, Lily Moayeri. I have been a music journalist since 1992, and I interview a lot of music-related people. This podcast, which is named after the song by The Who, is about my experience behind the story, what my experience is doing the interviews, just to give you a snapshot of what it's like on the other side of the digital recorder. Pictures of Lily. Thank you, everyone, for tuning into the Pictures of Lily podcast. This is episode 77. We publish monthly with a new episode posting on the second Wednesday of each month. You can find us on every platform by going to picturesoflily.com, where you can subscribe or follow us, and also connect to us on Instagram, SoundCloud, YouTube, Pandora, and Amazon. Although it's really best to listen to the podcast straight from the source at picturesoflily.com, as it is the highest quality audio and avoids copyright restrictions. This episode is on my personal experiences with Wham since 1983, culminating with my interview with the duo's Andrew Ridgeley this year. Hey everybody, take a look at me. I've got street credibility. I may not have a job, but I have a good time with the boys that I meet down on the line. Said I don't need you, so you don't approve. Here are a few snapshots of my experiences with Wham and Andrew Ridgeley. At the time of Wham's debut album, Fantastic, in 1983, I was living in Iran under the oppressive Islamic regime. If you've listened to the Gugush episode of this podcast, or either of the Taylor Hanson episodes, or the Duran Duran or Boy George episodes, you have heard me talk about what it was like living in Iran at that time. My access to music and movies was through bootlegs that were delivered to our house by a guy in an unmarked briefcase. It was on one of these bootlegs that I first saw Wham. George Michael and Andrew Ridgeley were different from the other artists I was into. For one, they were a duo. For another, they did a lot of dancing. And finally, their fashion sense was distinct, but in a way that did not match up with anything else that was going on at the time. George spent a lot of time staring into the camera, but it was Andrew's energy that caught my attention. From what I've heard from a lot of friends this year after the release of the Wham documentary on Netflix, I was not alone in being Team Andrew. Wham's music became a staple at our parties and on the mixtapes I made. Every single they released was a winner. When Careless Whisper came out, it felt like it was a turning point, not just for Wham, but also for music. Andrew is the co-writer of that song. By the time George Michael kicked off his solo career, I was living in Los Angeles. To be perfectly honest, George's aesthetic turned me off, even though in retrospect, I realize it was iconic. Some of his songs, however, I could not deny, particularly Father Figure and One More Try. A few years later, when he released his second album, Listen Without Prejudice, Volume 1, like everyone, I was taken with his model filled video for Freedom 90. I couldn't get enough of watching that super hot video. Praying for Time was another song from that album that I absolutely loved. While George was becoming one of the biggest artists of all time, I was paying less than no attention to him. But randomly, I saw him at a restaurant here in Los Angeles. I was with one of my friends who was visiting from the UK, and he said, "Of course we're seeing George Michael in a restaurant in Los Angeles." George was sharply dressed in a blazer and trousers, and he was very tall, which was unexpected. I was in Thailand on vacation when George died on Christmas Day 2016. That was a terrible year for deaths, including David Bowie, Prince, Leonard Cohen, and Carrie Fisher, who we lost 2 days after George. Until he died, I don't think George had crossed my mind for years, which is typical of a lot of humans, I think. The following year, Lawrence and I went into a deep dive into George's and Wham's discography. We got into this kick of listening to every single thing. Until then, I don't think I had ever appreciated their talent and their output properly, both as Wham and George on his own. I'm glad I came to that appreciation, even if it was 34 years after Wham's first release. Wham came to the forefront again this year with the release of the self-titled Netflix documentary I mentioned earlier. This coincided with the singles box set to mark the duo's 40th anniversary called Echoes from the Edge of Heaven. My latent interest in them reached a fever pitch. I watched the film in my preview content, which is what Netflix provides to the press where we can watch their original programming ahead of its release for journalistic purposes. I went to a screening of the film before its release, followed by a Q&A with its director, Chris Smith, moderated by my friend and sometime editor, Lindsay Parker. I watched the documentary again to prepare for an interview I had scheduled with Andrew Ridgely about the film. I was very excited about this interview, but it kept getting scheduled, canceled, and postponed due to Andrew's personal schedule. The interesting thing that happened because of these delays was that I spent more and more time delving into both Andrew's and George's lives. I listened to Andrew's 2019 autobiography, which is read by him. It very much feels like the documentary is, in large part, based on that book, which I highly recommend reading, but more so listening to. I also watched, listened, and read lots of interviews with Andrew. Then I got into watching interviews with George and also watching his documentary, Freedom Uncut. This is the most recent one that George himself put together, which was released posthumously. All of this overexposure greatly aided my preparation for the interview with Andrew. By the time we converged on a Zoom, I was an expert in Wham, George, and Andrew. The interview with Andrew happened while I was in the UK this past summer. By that time, every single one of my friends had seen the Wham documentary and had told me that they loved Andrew best. I was at my friend Dave Beer's house conducting the interview in his guest room, which until that moment, I didn't realize had a brothel-like look to it. Andrew and I had a chuckle about that. I started off telling Andrew my history with Wham in Iran, and he wasn't surprised. He's been told a lot of stories like mine over the years, and he shared this one with me from the time when he was promoting his autobiography. There was a lady who flew from Kabul via Dublin to Manchester to get a book signed because her brother had a bootleg copy of Fantastic that circulated in the village or town outside of Kabul in the early 80s when the Taliban had just won the country for the first time. Your story, it's not so dissimilar. One of the things that stands out in the documentary is George's and Andrew's senses of humor. Whenever you see them together, they are laughing and joking. Even after Wham, in all the George interviews I watched, his wicked sense of humor came through strongly. The music is dead serious, and George is this soulful guy who writes songs that make people cry and other stars cry, but in an interview, he's goofy all the way. It's such a contrast, and it's something that he has in common with Andrew. I talked to Andrew about that, and he told me this story. Recently, I was asked to sign some Netflix movie posters for a competition or for giveaways. One of the social media gals said, "You can do doodles, whatever you want." So I blacked out George's tooth, gave him a blue toe beard. Oh God, it was fantastic. Had they given George and me those posters, it would have been hilarious to see the stuff he'd have done with me. He was very funny. He had a very silly sense of humor. That remained always the case. That stupidity and silliness, it was enhanced. We brought it out of each other. There's no denying that was a fact. The central theme and pillar of our friendship was that silliness and also the enjoyment we derived from each other's company in that context as well. We did make each other laugh. When we were working on the Echoes from the Edge of Heaven singles collection, we did a little book with the 7-inch carry case. There's a chapter on each single. For the inlay, I chose informal photos I felt really illustrated the bond we had and the silliness. There's a photo of us at the final where evidently something that has made us both really smirk and is a really natural, informal, unstaged snap. It captures quite a seminal moment that essentially nothing had changed at all, and we were having a little sideways laugh about something that's amused us. The final that Andrew is referring to is Wham's final concert, a one-off at Wembley Stadium in London. Andrew had told me he regretted not touring the final, but it was George's decision not to, partially because he was ready for his solo career, and partially due to health concerns. I had heard and or read in some interviews with Andrew that he would love to put on a virtual Wham concert experience like what ABBA has done with Voyage. I asked him about it, and this is what he said. "I would love that. I went to ABBA Voyage and I loved the music. The atmosphere is so celebratory, it's so joyous, it's fantastic like all concerts are. It's a congregation of the converted. It's a form of worship, if you like, a communal celebration. Voyage is alive, it's like a flight simulator. You cannot convince yourself that you're not flying, it's impossible. Voyage had the same effect, you cannot convince yourself it's not live. Wham! The Final would lend itself to that format perfectly. George Michael Entertainment, they don't see things the same way at this current point in time. But they're not inflexible and they don't rule anything out or rule anything in. But I personally think it's the way that legacy will go. The opportunity to see Jimi Hendrix or David Bowie again or Led Zeppelin with John Bonham, the list is endless. I would pay to see any of those acts and technology will facilitate it. It may not be quite there yet, but it will be and it won't be long. With AI, not only will you have entirely believable but unbelievable representations insofar as you would not be able to tell the difference. It's coming down the line 100%. In some ways, it is the ultimate legacy development. It will be everything that legacy aspires to be. Something else that stands out about Andrew in the documentary is that he has been brimming with confidence from the very start of his life. This is quite a contrast to George, who came across confident but only arrived at some semblance of confidence through Andrew and their activities together. I told Andrew I thought their family backgrounds had a lot to do with how they saw themselves and how they approached the world and their confidence levels, whether or not they were aware of it. Andrew's father is Egyptian, and I think everyone knows that George's family is Greek. I told Andrew that living in the U.S., I wanted people to see me not so much as Iranian because I wanted to fit into the settings of the things that I liked, particularly music, that I wanted to be a part of those scenes, and I wanted full acceptance in those circles. This is what Andrew said in response. That's an interesting point. Part of the reason I was able to say that I knew exactly who I was is because I was Andrew Ridgely. My dad had changed his family name from Zachariah to Ridgely. As kids growing up in 1970s England, there was no question mark over whether I was English or not. My name is English, I was English. For Yogg, that was different. He never said it, but I think he intimated it in the things he said about his lack of confidence. But a kid growing up in 70s England called Yorgos Kyriakos Paniatou, that's not easy. How do you fit into English culture with a name like that? Everything around you is Elton John or David Bowie or Freddie Mercury. I asked Andrew if, with 2020 hindsight, he wished he had done anything differently. This is what he said. If I were advising the younger AJR from this point in time, I'd be saying, don't completely walk away from songwriting. Work at it and you never know. You're not utterly without talent. It's work and you need to work. Everyone needs to work. George needed to work. Me being feckless and lazy, I didn't. I told him I did not think of him that way at all. Quite the contrary. Andrew is a completely realized person. He's probably one of the only realized people I have ever come across in my life. It's not in human nature to be this way. We all have insecurities, ambitions, envy, the occasional chip on the shoulder. Andrew seems to have none of these things besides ambition. And even that, he had a vision for, which he achieved very early on, and left it where he achieved it. He told me, I never had any resentments. I didn't have chips. I never thought I was owed anything that I didn't have. Whether that helped, who knows? I don't think it's hindered me unduly. That's a snapshot of my 40-ish years of experiences in connection with Wham. You can find my interview with Andrew Ridgely at spin.com, and it's also linked at picturesoflily.com. Although a lot of the quotes in this podcast did not make it into the article, so that's some exclusive material for you. If you haven't watched the Netflix Wham documentary yet, I cannot recommend it enough, even if you're not a fan of the band. It's a story about friendship more than anything else. To stay in the loop, the Pictures of Lily newsletter goes out every couple of weeks, and you can subscribe to it for free. For my paid subscribers, I am posting bonus newsletters that include print-only interviews from my 31-year archive. So far, I have posted the interviews I did in the 90s with Robert Smith of The Cure, Noel Gallagher of Oasis, Richard Ashcroft of The Verve, and Damon Albarn of Blur and Gorillaz. For founding members, there are additional interviews with Noel, Richard, and Damon. I will link the Pictures of Lily newsletter in this podcast if you'd like to subscribe to it for free. I will be posting a couple of early print-only interviews with Johnny Marr shortly. In our next episode, I'm going to be talking about my minimal but impactful experiences with Pulp. She came from Greece, she had a thirst for knowledge. She studied sculpture at St. Martin's College. That's where I caught her eye. From myself and my co-producer, director, editor, Lauren Schroeder, thanks for listening. And if you have a chance to subscribe or follow the podcast on any of the podcast platforms, please do so and please rate and review. You can connect to us on picturesoflily.com, and from there you can choose your preferred podcast platform, or Instagram, or SoundCloud, or YouTube, or Pandora, or Amazon. You can also find the playlist for the podcast episodes on Spotify and YouTube. Wanna sleep with common people. I wanna sleep with common people like you. Oh, what else could I do? I said, oh, I'll see what I can do. Thanks for listening. Pictures of Lily.